One brain condition science has only recently put a name to is Asperger's syndrome. John Elder Robison has it.
I was really, really smart about imagining electronic circuits and imagining how musical signals flowed through them. And I was really, really dumb as a rock when it came to things like social connections and what to do with other people.
John Elder is currently on his fourth successful career, which he'll tell us about in a few minutes. You may know more than you think about our next guest. His name is John Elder Robison, and like Nikki Gottlieb, he has Asperger's syndrome. He also has a little brother, famous in the world of popular entertainment as Augustin Burroughs, the author of the best-selling memoir called Running with Scissors. Now, John Elder Robison has written his own memoir called Look Me in the Eye, My Life with Asperger's. He sat down with Strange Chimps and talked about his kind of autism.
Autism is really a continuum. You know, like the left end of the range, let's say you have the totally impaired people who can't live without assistance, and they maybe don't even speak at all. And then maybe you move to the center of the range, and you have people like me with Asperger's that are eccentric but articulate and get by on their own. But the continuum doesn't stop with me. It kind of fades further over into normalcy. Mm. So if you consider all the people who have some Aspergian traits, but maybe a psychiatrist wouldn't say they had Asperger's or autism, still, that probably doubles the number of people who are touched by it. And all of those people are those who will read my stories and say, you know, I saw myself in that and that and that. So maybe that's what, maybe at one out of every 50 or 60 people in the population.
You have a very successful life right now. I mean, you have for quite a while. If I hadn't read your book, would I even know you had Asperger's?
Well, you probably wouldn't know what I had. You would just know that I was a little eccentric. If you and I went out to a dinner, you might sit there thinking, you know, is he really interested in me? He's so serious. And indeed, I might not be serious at all, but I look this way and you can't tell. But if you came to my car business for the purpose of some kind of transaction with your car, you'd be coming seeking out my expertise. And as long as you received that, you'd probably be pretty satisfied. So in that regard, sure, I pass for normal in society. But when you move out of, say, workplace dealings and you move into social settings, people are more likely to think that you're strange. Even then, though, when you get to be my age, if you become fairly well-to-do and successful, that is a large part of making the transition from being weird to eccentric, and you become acceptable anyway.
A certain amount of weirdness is permissible if you've made enough money.
You know, that is just about the unfortunate truth of it in this country. You know, if you're eccentric and weird and you talk to people at a party in a little apartment, you're just another weirdo that everyone ignores. But if the party's in your own couple million-dollar home, well, then you're just a successful eccentric.
Now, you grew up at a time when there wasn't even a diagnosis for Asperger's, and you weren't diagnosed yourself until fairly later in your life, right?
I wasn't diagnosed until I was 40 years old, and it was just a chance occurrence. I had started my automobile business, and this therapist who worked with troubled kids had bought a Land Rover from me. And one day, he came in and he said, you know, therapists make a practice to not diagnose their friends or they won't have any friends. But he said, in this case, I've got this book that I think describes you to a T, and I think that you really ought to read it. And the book was titled Asperger's Syndrome. And I learned that it was not just me that was a freak or a loser, but that I'm normal for what I am. And there are so many of us, they had a name for it. Because before he gave me the book, I'd never even heard of Asperger's.
So was it a relief to have a diagnosis?
Well, it was truly a life-changing experience because all of a sudden I was able to look at these things. And even such a simple thing as the title of my book, Look Me in the Eye, people would say all my life, they'd say, look me in the eye, young man. Look at me when I'm talking to you. And, you know, and I thought I was doing that. Clearly, I did not understand even the most basic social errors that I had been making all my life in my dealings with non-Aspergian people. So it was a huge, huge change for me for the better.
For the better, partly in the sense that for once you could stop feeling like there was something wrong with you?
Well, yes. For the first time in my life, I began to realize that I was not, you know, just a total fraud and a misfit, which is all people ever told me I was all my life. I always thought, well, if I could visualize, you know, a special effects system, if I could visualize something that would take a guitar and make it sound like something else, and I could imagine it in my mind, and then if I built it, if it sounded like I imagined, I thought, well, that's pretty good, you know, and it allowed me to function because I could make what musicians wanted. But I always felt, from an engineering standpoint, I must be a fraud because I didn't understand the engineering text. I could not write the equations that described what was happening to the waves going through it because I didn't know conventional mathematics like they taught it in school. And yet I could visualize these complex calculus functions in my mind as they were implemented in my circuits.
So what about in your family? I mean, your family's already sort of famous because your younger brother wrote a best-selling memoir about growing up in your family, and you'd left home by the time a lot of the things he wrote about happened. What was growing up in your family like before you left?
Well, one difference between the story that readers are going to encounter in my book and the story of childhood life and Running with Scissors is that when I was little, my parents, you know, were young and I think they were hopeful and they had dreams, you know, and they were pretty sort of together still. And when I was little, we had good times together. You know, we went out and we camped and we, you know, did stuff outdoors and I saw things. But my parents weren't happy together. And my father drank more and more. And as he drank, he got mean. And my mother developed a worsening mental illness that eventually led her to be institutionalized when I was a teenager. And all of that began to happen at about the time my brother was born. So for me, life as a small child has good memories and bad ones. For my brother, there weren't very many good times left. And his account is consequently kind of darker because it was a dark time. Then, when I was 16 and my brother was 8, I couldn't really take it anymore, and I left home. I had flunked out of school, and I was going nowhere, and I joined a band where I was accepted, and I was on my own. And all of the really crazy events that happened in Running with Scissors actually occurred when I was on the road with Kiss. And my brother, you know, sort of alludes to that in his chapter about me. But luckily for me, I guess I had escaped before the worst of that happened. And I actually didn't even know about it. I didn't know the extent of how bad it was until I read my brother's book. And I was just totally shocked because, you know, people reading Running with Scissors, you know, they remember this scene with Bookman having sex with my brother. And, you know, he tried to do the same thing to me 5 years before. And I was just totally shocked to read it. So I think that our books really complement each other because they provide sort of a continuity of our lives.
There's some funny moments. One of the funniest that made me laugh out loud is the moment when you're seeing this psychiatrist, Dr. Finch, and he tells you it's okay to rename your parents.
Oh, yes. And I name my father Stupid, and I name my mother Slave. And of course, you know, people who like my brother are going to be interested to know that he's also had some more names too. You know, when his book came out, he was called Augustine Burroughs, but people learned that he was born Chris Robison and changed his name. However, with the publication of my book, they're going to learn that that wasn't the first time, because when his mother brought him home from the hospital, I looked at him and he kind of sat there and my mother said, "This is your new brother, Christopher Richter Robison." And I looked at him and he kind of went at me. And I said, "Your name is Snort." And his name continued to be Snort until he was about 4 years old and he started taking my toys, at which point I told him his new name was Varmint.
So tell me about your years with Kiss. I mean, you've had, as you say, more than one kind of remarkable career. Here you are growing up, this kid in high school with this sort of savant-like ability to intuit the way electronics work. How'd you wind up working for a huge rock band?
Well, I started with small bands, and I went to bigger and bigger bands, and I was working for Pink Floyd's Sound Company in New York City. They had this huge radio studio where I would fix and modify equipment. And one day, they rented it to Kiss to rehearse. And I was looking at them out there, and I saw Ace struggling with this guitar. And I went over and asked him what he was doing. And he said that he wanted to embed smoke bombs in the body of a Les Paul guitar so that it would blow fire on stage. And I said, well, I can do that. So he turns to his roadie and he says, Tex, have Gibson ship this guy some Les Pauls. And, you know, and they shipped me some Les Pauls, and I made him his smoking guitars, and that was how I came to do it. And after we did that, we made sort of a long line of guitars that, you know, did bizarre stuff, and it became really a centerpiece of Ace's act.
John Elder Robison's book is called Look Me in the Eye. He spoke with N. Strange Ships. I'm Jim Fleming. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.